more courage to just be where I wanted to be with psychiatry. At the end of the 6 months, I was just a shadow of myself. I didn't handle it well on some existential and emotional level. I was completely drained, and I just took off after 6 months and started touring the country looking for somewhere to live away from where I'd been, with several copies of Charlotte's Introduction to Human Ethology in my knapsack. Didn't come back to psychiatry for another year or more, by which I had started writing, I think, and I think it just gave me courage to just be in the psychiatric situation and try and do the best I could with the people called patients that I met. And feel that there was a sense to it all, and that they were probably part of some quite deep life process that was trying to work itself out. So I think I was able to trust the clientele better through having a theory somewhere in the back of my mind that said everybody's trying their best with crazy situations and some deep contradiction that we're all in together. So the thing is that I reframed her theory. I found the sort of emphasis on the sexual deviation irrelevant because I could sense that the deviation was in all of us. And also I really took it to heart that what she was talking about was an evolutionary process that's at the heart of us being conscious. Not just being an animal that knows what to do, but being an animal that doesn't know what to do and is conscious, whatever, you know, why would an animal be conscious? It's just a completely bizarre thing. But what I took from Charlotte's theory was that because we're in a force field which is contradictory, which is an emotional and existential force field that is contradictory, we have to be conscious. And the exploration that we do as conscious beings is trying to get rid of the pain of the contradiction and to restore a pattern of life that is less contradictory and feels right. So I took the theory as a theory of being in the world, as a sort of existential theory, I suppose. That's how it worked for me, and it gave me the courage to be there with that. I mean, I still got very lost with all kinds of stuff. I couldn't really handle psychiatry at all. Got very upset with it.
Does it vitiate the theory at all that when you discover that Charlotte was not, you know, a PhD, was not a Hungarian intellectual, was not, what does it say to you? How do you emerge from the revelations that, you know, that you discovered that came about?
Yeah, to me she wasn't an authority, she was a discoverer. So, and what she discovered was exciting, and I made it my own. I mean, I think I had quite a personal relationship in this strange sort of way, and I think what was most shattering about her being a man and having had a facade which she wouldn't tell me about right to the end, was how she had deceived me and had been completely other. So I felt personally betrayed by that. It didn't affect my relationship with her work at all. It was quite irrelevant because, I mean, I wasn't impressed by her personality at all. I mean, I just took it on because there it was. And I think at some deeper level, it didn't make any difference. I think the personal betrayal did, and the sort of sense that something that I'd just taken for granted was I knew this extraordinary woman was turned upside down. Reminds me a bit of this experiment they told me about in physiology of vision. They constructed complicated spectacles which reversed the entire visual field. So people live in an upside-down world, and they struggle to learn how to move around in this upside-down world for several days. And at a certain point during this experiment, they're not allowed to take them off, or only perhaps when they go to bed in a darkened room. They don't see the world the right way up again. And after several days, the world spontaneously turns the right way up. And they said that, the people who told me about this experiment, that when the spectacles were taken away, people were deeply distressed and felt that they were going mad because the world was upside down. And there were no spectacles, and they thought, I can't live like this. And, I mean, which is just a very deep dislocation. And I felt that for the first 12 or 24 hours after I got this news, and then realised it didn't make any difference. I mean, she was dead anyway. It didn't put the theory in a different light whatsoever anyway.
Weren't you one of the people who saw her last? Did you say to just like start with the approaching the door, but put us in the scene of approaching her in her last days?
Myself and Don were taking food. She was obviously very ill, and Don was quite distressed and said, she's got to see a doctor. She needs to be in hospital. And she was very clear that she wanted nothing of the kind, and that if she was going to die, she was going to die. I went to a local GP to discuss this. There was no question of any mental disorder at all, which I told. I mean, I told the GP this, and I said, "What are the parameters here? You know, some of us are really quite distressed at how ill she is," and the GP said, "Well, there's no two ways about it. If people do not want medical attention, there's nothing that can force them to have it." So I thought, "Well, that's where it's at then." So myself and Don continued to deliver food. And I think the last week she wouldn't let us in. And I mean, I can see now that she probably hadn't shaved and was no longer able to keep up appearances. The last time I went round there, she just said, go away, let me die. And I thought, well, this is what I have to do then. And I wrote her a note saying, if there's anything you want. I mean, I thought, well, you know, I don't know what sort of state she's in there. Make sure she's still got my phone number. So I put a note through saying, if there's anything you want, you know I'm at the other end of a phone. And I went away. I had a friend who was living the other side of Hampstead Heath, and once I sort of got away, I thought, well, this is crazy. I've left 3 fat Sunday newspapers and 4 pints of milk at the door. If I'm serious about this, I have to remove those, because otherwise it's just going to draw attention, and she doesn't want that. So I went back and I took the newspapers and the milk away.
Did you have a very good idea about
what? Can I stop you there, because we need to reload?
Sure.
My
heart was
going, I thought, I'm going to have a crash,
Thick fog. The sexual deviation is the mainspring of evolution. And that's the mainspring of most of her contradictions. That's how she got contradictions, was by starting out with that. And you say, later, that didn't really matter. It's really another way of expressing kind of.
Well, that's, because I was feeling a bit foolish when you said, how did she take to challenges? Because, I mean, I did say to her, I think Don was there, because he sort of Yeah, so there were the three of us. And I said, it's not really right to make that a slogan and have it sum up your theory, because it's just as true within your theory to say resistance to sexual deviation is the main spring of evolution. So Don looked terribly upset, and she just said, you've got a point there. because it was a slogan. It was a very clever, nice slogan to pick out of this incredibly complicated stuff. I mean, I suppose Colin Wilson's article, which is what started most people off, because there it was in Time Out. She has a theory about sex and evolution. I don't know whether he says sexual deviation is the mainspring of evolution, but it makes no sense anyway. It's got to be, and she was crystal clear that there's a pull to this deviation and there's a resistance to this deviation. I mean, that's the mainspring of evolution. But I mean, she never believed the slogan as such. She just sort of went along with it, I think, or having thought of it. It was such a good slogan. I mean, people in gay lib were wearing it for a decade or two after she died, I think. And why not?
One aspect that's very interesting about her is that one way she could be slagged off is to simply is to say that she was simply universalizing her own woes, her own trauma, her own struggles, by expressing that in a theory.
That's nonsense. That is complete nonsense. She spent years, before she came up with this theory, she spent years researching sexual deviation, knowing she was a deviant, knowing that the extant learned theories obviously didn't begin to deal with what she was living. And she was bitten by the deviation, by the fact that it made no sense, by the fact that she wasn't alone, that the people who researched sexual deviation were all kind of either kind of porno addicts or prurient scientists with buckets of disinfectant, sort of, that they would sort of paint around the person that they were interviewing. And she realised there are really interesting questions here. How do people get off? And she started researching that out of interest. She wasn't trying to justify herself. She wrote this extraordinary thick tome called Man and Stroke or Woman, which still doesn't justify or legitimise being a deviant. She just says what an extraordinary complex wealth of deviation we manifest and how rich and amazing it is. And it was a rubbish theory because it still made no sense. Why would any animal be like this? So when she decided it had to do with evolution, that was a penny dropping. I mean, she wasn't motivated to justify herself. She'd already committed herself to this research, got completely up a blind alley with it, and suddenly thought, oh, there's a biological reason for it. It's not. I mean, I can't sort of represent that as special pleading, no matter what I do with it. Could you perhaps set up an argument for me and make me?
Well, the special pleading would be that she's a deviant herself. She's just by finding a universal justification for it. The point is that she wasn't doing it.
No, not at all.
She was critical of deviance for ending up in dead ends as well, which gravitates against the notion that she's simply justifying her own struggles.
Oh, I think so. Yeah. But in anyway, the research was going on for years, at least 2 years, probably 3 or 4 years, before she thought it had anything to do with evolution. It was almost like a last step. And she was writing these incredibly pretentious philosophical treatises and all kinds of stuff. I mean, she obviously had to explain something. I don't know that she wanted to justify it exactly, and certainly wasn't getting very far in justifying it. It was...
Why did you keep wading through those huge tomes? Because they were very daunting things.
Yeah. Because I knew it was the stuff that I was trying to figure out for myself. And that she had much clearer arguments. I mean, the arguments about the three lures. I wonder why I wanted to say lures of neurophysiology. The three laws of neurophysiology. I mean, it's a good argument. I don't know how tight it is. But it sort of says, according to a kind of hardcore scientist's view of the matter, all we have are neural impulses, and the neural impulses can't tell us anything about what's out there. This is all we've got. And the behaviourist theories, which somehow claim some stance where the scientist thinks they can be objective and make theories up about these people over here who are machines, completely violates these three laws of neurophysiologists. It's as if the scientist can magically step outside of that. I mean, it's like any scientist is actually in a bind. They have to cope with what their nervous system's delivered to them. And these arguments are very, very clear in Charlotte right from the start. And I just knew that she was onto something.
Is there anyone today... I hate to interrupt. Is there anybody today who is tantamount to the kind of achievement that Charlotte was aiming at, or either achieved or was aiming to achieve? Other thinkers and writers and scholars you would compare her to?
Well, that's very interesting, because I think a lot of stuff is catching up and providing ground which she didn't have. I don't think that anybody's quite hit on her hypothesis yet about the dual gender, whatever we'd call it. There's a complete gap. You've got Jung and the sort of cod psychology. Everybody knows that we're all male and female. We've got really exciting developments in cybernetic field and evolution understood as being evolution of cybernetic systems. Really exciting stuff, which Charlotte's theory will just slot really neatly into, which wasn't there 20 years ago. They don't seem to... I mean, Peter... Do you remember his name? The book's called Holistic Darwinism, but there's obviously a broad front of research on what is it that evolves. And I think the answer is, on multiple levels, cybernetic systems evolve. DNA does not evolve. DNA is part of an integrated protein metabolism system embodied in individuals. But it's not just individuals that evolve, it's viable communities that evolve. And they do it through cybernetic feedback mechanisms. I mean, I feel I'm sort of rambling a bit here because it's very dense and complex, and I've got the gist of the argument. I wouldn't be able to argue it in very much detail, but it seems very strong to me, and it seems to be a framework wherein one would no longer have to say Charlotte is a challenger to Charles Darwin, because it seems Charles Darwin would probably have been happy with these developments. He would have probably been very embarrassed by Richard Dawkins. So Richard Dawkins would have to argue against Charlotte's theories, but I don't think Charles Darwin would have had to. And these developments that I'm talking about, there ceases to have to be any sort of argument. Charlotte's theory fits into a broadly Darwinian framework. I couldn't have said that even a year ago till I came across this guy. And I mean, he's not just one person. There's just masses of research all pushing in the same direction.
Do you see other people who were coming up with parallel lines research being recognized
I think that there's a problem that psychology, I mean, what I call imaginary psychology, after I think it's Martin Buber, talks about imaginary psychology, which is where you study the mind as you imagine it, rather than people in their complexity engaged in their symbolic and complicated interactions. That imaginary psychology doesn't have any relationship with biology whatsoever. And the need to understand what we're about from a personal point of view and explain it with some intelligible relationship to biology, there's just a big gap, as far as I can see, in the culture. There's a whole area of understanding of emotion in a more biological context. I think of Martha Nussbaum, and there's a huge literature of the intelligibility of emotion and a refusal to see emotion and reason. I mean, that goes back to the beginning of the 20th century anyway. So a lot of very advanced stuff has been sitting around and people haven't put it together. So the people who should have talked about gender and the puzzles of gender don't realise, I mean, why are there two sexes? It's a very bizarre thing that we just take for granted because we have always known. But it's not at all clear. I mean, there are, you have to think about it, there are non-Charlotte accounts which could explain why there are two sexes, rather than just hermaphroditic or whatever you call it creatures. I mean, if we agree that genetic material has to be exchanged and that creatures have to conjugate, on the face of it, it would be easier if they were all the same and you recognised your own species and just conjugated. But very clearly, there's this sexual dimorphism right back to primitive plants. Why? What's it doing there? And nobody seems to really... There are these popular books, this Matt somebody, I can't remember anybody's names today, but there's books that scratch the surface. What they don't do is they don't try to build a bridge between lived reality, which is what novelists and dramatists recreate and what we're actually living with, a bridge between lived reality and biology. Nobody seems to want to build that bridge. So I read lots of stuff that seems really exciting and nearly seems to get there, but then they just don't make that step. And Martha Nussbaum, I don't think, would take Jung very seriously. Jung more or less had the entire Charlotte Batch map straight down, but he didn't want to think it had anything to do with biology or bodies. So... it just and his androgyny doesn't cause problems, whereas Charlotte, in line with Sigmund Freud, I mean, she does rescue really interesting and exciting things in both Freud and Jung. So her version of androgyny is an extreme problem, because if we don't know what we're supposed to be, how can we mate? So androgyny is should be considered a huge biological puzzle. I don't quite know why people don't ask these questions.
The question that envelops all of this project is she ultimately a super con, or is this a con artist to some degree who eventually became realized? A real identity, a genuine identity in the course of mimicking one. What do you think, super con or somebody who just became...
It's a false dichotomy anyway, because she's both. I mean, she was a super con right to the end. Her whole persona was a con. I also think that she had incredibly powerful insights that she couldn't lose if she'd wanted to. And that she did sometimes cut corners and bluster and make up bits of theory to fit. So I don't think the con artist ever went away, but the insights, I think, are absolutely shattering and powerful. And they guided her whether she liked it or not. And her stuff is unbelievably interesting. I mean, I find it very hard to read. I tried to read it again. And I'm so impatient with her convoluted style and the sort of... I wanted to sort of cut through the cobwebs. But I think that the insights are... They're either rock solid or they're just so exciting, somebody ought to get down and refute them. But it's definitely the business. I think that if somebody could prove her wrong, they would discover all sorts of amazing things about ethology... ecology, psychology. So, yeah, I mean, I think that it's important and that she always knew it was. And the people who would like to argue the way you're suggesting, they haven't really taken her arguments on board at all. I mean, it has to be a very superficial point of view.
Weighing it all up in terms of your contact and experience with Charlotte, was it worth it? Was it worth knowing this person who had 15 identities?
Well, I didn't know any of them except the last one. Well, there's no question about it. I mean, I find it's not just a theory, but it's a way of grappling with things, a flexibility of thinking. On a whole lot of levels, I don't know really how to say it.
Was it worth the candle?
Oh, well, yes, but I mean, definitely yes. I would like to know what I would have figured out for myself. That's the only question in my mind. I mean, she was ahead of me in thinking about things that I didn't have a vocabulary for. And that's quite priceless.
Okay, and Gilbert, do you have a question?
Do you just before you stop, can you just explain for the camera's benefit, but I mean talk to Kurt, just who Don is, because you've referred to him several times.
That's
just
right.
So that we give him a context too.
Right, well he was her most faithful.
Sorry, could you say Don was? Because we're not using Kurt's questions, just
to
interrupt.
Yeah, we're not using... The viewer's not going to hear any questions. They're only going to hear you.
Yeah.
Don Smith.
Don Smith was her closest friend, as far as I knew, and a devotee. Do you want me to start again?
Yes, if you would. Yeah.
You did ask the question. Don Smith was Charlotte's closest friend and collaborator and sidekick and devotee. And I think he'd made her theory and her his life. No, that's not true. I didn't know his life. I mean, he was very happy and deeply involved in gay liberation and with circles of people that I didn't know. Do you have questions about him? He was one of her closest people.
And what
were your impressions of him? Very sweet, very strange. I think actually we were all strange people. Utterly sincere, very intelligent and not very bright, and very much of a follower and a sort of, oh, Charlotte, would you explain, and this sort of thing, and sort of wanting to understand. I think he was a sort of centrifugal personality, which is he couldn't possibly actually understand in the nature of who he was. So there's a paradox, but he was a complete sweetheart, and he loved her, and he loved her theory in the version that he understood, which was all of these very larger-than-life, bizarre, sexually deviant wonders. Getting up to all their shenanigans. He loved it. You know, I actually understand the universe much better than she does. That's Michael Kirkman, Brian Lewis, Jeff Blundell. It was almost like a Pirandello play or something. They all wanted to tell me that they knew better than Charlotte, and Colin Wilson has always said he knows better than Charlotte.
Doesn't he?
This sounds like the average after-seminar chats that one would have.
Is that right? So is that not that big a deal?
That yeah. Nobel laureate, we didn't, we don't go to the
people. Yeah, right.
Off to you, Joker.
Kurt, just get out of my sideline, because then he's just got Joker to
look. I wasn't sure where it would be best to try to do.
Well, if I, before you start running...
What does
I am
Kurt...
running.
Oh.
Go on.
Oh, no. Well, I was thinking...
We're running.
Yeah. Okay, I had a number of questions which follow on from your answers.
Mm-hmm.
The first one I have down here, it's chronological order. The first one I have down here is, you said keeping up appearances. She was keeping up appearances.
Mm-hmm.
Towards her dad. This is one of the great themes of the Sholler story, isn't it? Keeping up appearances.
Mm.
I just wondered what thoughts you had on why, because you've already said how disappointed you were, in a way.
Disappointed about what?
About having deceived everybody. You felt.
I didn't, no, that's not what I said at all. No, and I wasn't disappointed. I was distressed that she deceived me, personally.
Yes.
Joby, just let Mike talk. Don't keep interrupting. Go on. Go on, Mike.
What was the other thing that you were saying?
Because I haven't asked the question yet. That's why I was wondering if you could run it into a past the question. But go on, yeah. No, I also felt very distressed as well. I was just wondering, what is your take on why she did that?
Well, some people do, don't they? Some people really want to make a good show, and he was obviously one of those people. I mean, I think what's interesting is that when her life got totally torpedoed, I mean, I think there was a loss of a romantic relationship that Michael...
Okay, I'm running.
Okay, yeah.
Sorry about that.
Are you running now?
Yep.
Okay, I'm keeping up appearances.
It's also whether you show vulnerability, and she didn't show vulnerability in the sort of dimensions that you're talking about. I mean, she'd burst into tears about various things, and quite genuinely. But she, I mean, the vulnerability of sort of saying that your identity is an assumed identity, and that you're not who you, I mean, I can't see how she could have got anywhere near that. Just, you know, I mean, it just doesn't fit with how she presented herself at all.
It might have been easier for her theory that had she said, look, I'm living with a woman and I know this stuff is...
It wouldn't, no, because people would immediately come up with the special pleading argument, wouldn't they? So it wouldn't help. I mean, what she did set herself up for was people coming out with that argument after she died.
Well, yeah, sexual deviation is the mainspring of evolution. And then there's a possibility of resistance too.
Well, it's not a possibility. The whole point is that there is a resistance. It's not that there's a possibility.
Is it reproductory deviation?
No, it's the whole behaviour pattern. That there are instinctively programmed behaviour patterns. We know that we have a cultural style as well, that we learn the cultural style. But something in us makes us want to be completely other than what we're supposed to be.
Could we explain human sexual deviation in terms other than evolution?
Nobody's even tried to explain it. Why is the human species so bizarre? Nobody. I mean, have they? Do you know any coherent theory that would explain why one species does all these utterly peculiar things, like building skyscrapers, getting into space rockets, rain dancing?
Or the Tower of Babel.
All of it.
I'm just thinking that there was a quote I was reading today from Deuteronomy saying, a man should not dress as a woman, nor a woman as a man. I didn't know that quote existed. Mm. But I'm just thinking in terms of evolution, if we know anything about evolution, or have any speculation about evolution that it possibly had occurred, we'd be thinking about fundamentalist explanations for sex deviation. I mean, they're all over the Bible, they're all over...
Well, there's no explanation,
there's
is there?
No. No, that was the only question. Do you think there could be an explanation outside of evolution? Outside of the concept of evolution?
I've never heard one, and I'm open-minded enough that if I had, I would immediately latch onto it and say, oh, you know, so I'm sure that nothing's come my way.
Can I ask you about the people who went to Charlotte's talks? Because you may know that Tom Wilson, for instance, is described them as highly intelligent people, but all searchers and all slightly lost, etc.
Everybody was a searcher and was slightly lost in the 1970s. What's he talking about?
But did you think that they were sexual deviants?
No.
How can we put this that we can get a clip out of it that actually said not sexual deviants?
Can you tell Joga what sort of people were attracted to Charlotte and went to attend her lectures?
All sorts of people. I mean, I don't think that you could categorise them at all. Just a very wide range of people. And with very different motives, obviously, and very different interests. They just don't fit into a category. And the suggestion that they were all... It's the suggestion that they were all sexual deviants, because... I mean, not in any obvious way. I mean, the thing is that when this came around earlier on in this conversation, I said, well, we all are anyway, but that's because I was talking from inside Charlotte's perspective. From a common sense perspective, it's absolute nonsense to say that they were significantly more sexually deviant than the rest of the population. It's just not true.
Taken at face value. They seem perfectly normal, if you like, boys and girls to me.
Well, I wouldn't go as far. I mean, yeah, I said what I said, that they were probably representative of the population, but I think we are a weird species, so, and I would have known that and said that if I'd had nothing to do with Charlotte Batch.
Now, you call us Charlotte Batch rather than Bach.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Why is that?
I think probably because she called it Charlotte Batch.
I just got one more question.
Okay.
There are loads and loads and loads, but we could just talk about them rather than...
What's your important one?
Get Mike's take on them. no, there was a programme last night called Atheism on BBC. I don't know if anybody saw it. A programme called Atheism... and a great deal of it was taken up with Darwin being the sort of, you know, the linchpin of all the atheist perspective, the whole atheist perspective, that they all rely on the origin of species, basically. And the narrator was saying that the problem is that what Darwin does not do is account for the origin of species. And he got a number of eminent scientists to say that this was the case. And I remember Charlotte Bach saying that 30 years ago. It's precisely what he didn't account for. I'm sure Charlotte Bach wasn't the first person to say that.
Mm.
But I'm wondering, because you were talking about species.
Was I?
Yeah, you gave some answers about Darwinism. Yeah, in which you spoke about Darwinism. Richard Dawkins. So she wouldn't agree with Dawkins, and indeed, I'm sure she wouldn't agree with Dawkins.
Well, I think that you have to...
Didn't think that Darwin had explained the origin of species. Not the origin. Simply the... the modification of...
I mean, what strikes me about this is that the way people normally talk about it just doesn't get down to brass tacks, and that Charlotte did. She talks about courting behaviour and pre-copulatory behaviour and copulatory behaviour. And of what the animals or people or whatever we are actually doing, there's a decision to mate or not to mate, and species comes about when you refuse to mate, and then your gene lines become divergent. So, I mean, that's clear. I think Darwin made a good fist of it, and I think that we were put into a false argument, because at the time that Charlotte were putting her theories across, there were these militant ultra-Darwinists who were not remotely faithful to his spirit of search and wondering. They were hammering out a party line, and they had a vested interest in denying that there was anything else going on but some kind of wonderfully mechanical and mindless process. Well, we all know that we're involved in a mindful process. So it was all utterly stupid. It's nothing to do with Darwin. Charlotte, I think, was tricked into taking an apparently anti-Darwinian stance, which there was no need for, because there's plenty of room within Darwinian evolution to ask the questions that need to be asked. And I think that Charlotte's answers should count as really interesting hypotheses. But unfortunately, people weren't asking the right questions. I hope that they will do in the next 10 or 20 years. And Peter Cornford and whoever all these people are that he's quoting, they're on the sort of lines where these questions can properly be asked now.
The conclusion of this programme last night on atheism was that Darwin, was by most of the contributors to it, was that Darwin's work needed to be looked at afresh and updated.
It's going on anyway. What are they talking about that it needs to be? It's been going on ever since he started publishing. People have been trying to get a handle on it in all sorts of ways, and it's still very much alive. It's not that it needs to be. It's happening.
Do you think, in what ways do you think that Charlotte's theory would contribute to this rewriting?
It's not a question of rewriting Darwin. It's saying, is there some extra process going on here which makes evolution more, buzzy is the word that comes to me. You know, there's something going on in evolution that's actually very exciting and that we're caught up in. I mean, but it would sit within Darwin's framework now that it's been opened up to be about the evolution of cybernetic coherent systems, which means communities. I mean, Dawkins talks about some of it. He talks about the evolution of memes, which I think is some unit of mentality. I mean, I find that a bit crude. I mean, but it's patterns of life evolve and are tested and are naturally selected. And they're partly naturally selected by whether people like them or not. So, you know, religions are being constantly created and are being naturally selected. Evidently, quite weird things like this Revelations, end of the world, you know, taking biblical prophecy literally, it appeals, people like it, but they're getting more and more cut off from what's really going on because they don't understand the history they're living in. They're busy imposing some ridiculous kind of prefabricated map onto the living history. So they like it, they run with it, they will become obsolete. But I think that there is a natural selection of belief systems, and belief systems that are relatively more true and relatively more satisfying will eventually, I mean, I wouldn't say will eventually prevail, but there is a pressure towards a better intelligence about what we are and what's going on. And those questions, I think, Charlotte's theories, whether they're true or false, have an immensely important part to play in the conversation. It's just the conversation hasn't begun, or it's just beginning.
Great, yeah.
Good.
Now, is there anything now? Because
well, Mike, I don't know if you've got any last thoughts that anything you should impart about Charlotte to us or to Jobert to keep the eye line.
Well, there is the perspective of a friend of mine that he thought that her writing is almost deliberately off-putting, and that on some level she didn't want to be really understood. And I think that there may be something in that. I mean, there's two aspects to that. One is that on some level she was fending people off. So she was creating something false to keep people at bay. And that meant that she didn't tell her story straight. And I think for some sort of ambition in her to be a great philosopher, which, or a great theoretician, which actually derailed the honesty that would have made more of her insights. I think that a lot of the time she's kind of putting on a great sort of show and not really putting her ideas across with any clarity or cogency. And I think what I was saying earlier about playing to the audience, she attracted people who were curious and wanted something bizarre and exotic. And she was willing to dress it up in that form. But actually, it's all very much simpler and could have been said much more simply. But she didn't want to.
Do you think if she was more easy to understand, she might have felt she would have been unravelled as a person?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think she would have been rumbled.
So can you explain that in your words?
Yeah. Well, I think that living a life of deception, it's like one thing leads to another. And I think she had a commitment to her dishonesty, which I think is part and parcel of why she made her theory so unapproachable and difficult. And I think that if she had been clearer that it is about lived reality and who we really are, it would immediately start to raise these questions. So I think it was all part of her self-protective front that she maintained this at a very theoretical level and didn't bring it down to the real questions of who are we and what are we doing with each other. So I think it's very much part of her deception. I'm not sure whether I answered that question. Was there something there that you were onto that I didn't quite pick up?
No, I think that was it. You were saying that she had deliberately made the word very obtuse.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say calculated, but I think instinctively she was playing a certain game with it. And it led her into this massively pretentious and complex structure with which she bewitched people, and her real insights were worth more than that and were actually much simpler. But if she'd communicated at that much more gutsy level and said, this is actually about who we are, where we're going with our lives, what we're doing, the question of who she is would automatically have to come up. So I think there was a huge smokescreen going on in her whole self-presentation and her whole presentation of the theory. But the insights, I think, are incredibly challenging and exciting. Whether they're true or not, they still need to be taken on board and people explore them in a way that hasn't happened yet.
So she was kind of stuck in
it. We've run out.
That was terrific.
Super.
Yeah.
She couldn't say to anybody, look, I'm actually a man, love me
no.
as a human being. She couldn't do that.
No.